Blog Talk Radio.
We hope.
She asked him why
I'm a hairy guy.
Still more fountains of fuzzy fun. Fuzzy furry fun. Now I sound like Dr. Seuss. Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, accompanied by...
Fuzzy Wuzzy was a bear. Fuzzy Wuzzy had no hair. Fuzzy Wuzzy wasn't very fuzzy, was he? Dave Bickley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One.
I thought Fuzzy Wuzzy ate a worm on the railroad tracks, or no, that's something different. All right, I don't know. All I know is it's still hair weekend, which for me, Dave, is really appropriate. Here's a fact. I'll bet you won't be too surprised. Ever since COVID, the coof, as the young kids call it, the coof.
Okay.
I have not had my hair cut.
Oh, well, big surprise here. Big surprise there. Yes. When I first met you, you had nice long hair. And,
yeah.
You had that on purpose. And that COVID wasn't your reason. But
now it's old scraggly, old guy scraggly hair. Pretty soon I'll be looking like the Crypt Keeper.
Okay. When you get a rubber band and put it in a ponytail, I'm coming after it, Dale. I'm coming after it.
Uh-oh, no. Well, I was going to do that and get like a buckskin shirt and maybe a coonskin cap. Well, I don't know about coonskin. I'm going back and forth, either one of those skunk hats or a coonskin cap.
Well, okay, as long as you have that buckskin with the fringe, I'll let you go. But, you know, anything other than that, look out. Watch how you sleep. That's what I got to say.
Yeah. Well, we survived a lot of wind. I thought we might lose internets or something last night, because I know people up closer to the lake were getting blasted by the wind. And, yeah, no man bun. You darn right, Fogsbane. I don't do the man bun. Nuh-uh. I'm too old for that mess. Homie, don't play that man bun thing. I mean, if somebody else
man
wants
bun.
To, that's fine, but it don't work for me. Oh,
yeah. I've seen some guys wearing them, and I've never seen a guy ever that it worked on. You know, maybe CW were here. If she tunes in later tonight, we'll have to ask her, hey, has there ever been a man bun that's turned you on? You know, but I don't expect guys to turn me on, and they don't. So, if a gal doesn't turn a gal on, then what the heck do you have it for?
I don't know.
That just means you're afraid of
is a fright. It
yep.
is.
Got the sound bites going all weekend. Fabulous.
Yes. Oh, we got more. We got a new one for you.
Hey,
tonight,
boy, we have all kinds of fun. We got Sherlock Holmes and the Red-Headed League. We have not one, not two, but 12 plus one bonus Dave Fact. Hair fact, day fact.
Baker's dozen for good luck.
For good luck. Yeah.
All right.
And there's a couple
hair
in
facts,
there that'll probably
facts.
Get me. There's probably a couple in there that, you know, in CW tunes in, you go, oh, Dave. You know? No, we will do those maybe in between. Start maybe in between the first and second segment there, just for fun. And,
yeah.
Keep them rolling in between the different segments. But it's... it should be okay. I ran them by one of the gals at work earlier this week, and she got a kick out of them. So,
okay, good.
I'm not sure
that was your meter, huh? If it got by that girl, we're okay.
Well,
it's clear.
Well, no. Well, you know what? I run a lot of my scripts by her and things, and she also proofreads them for me. She proofreads
nice.
Without correcting them. So, but
hey,
yeah,
she gets a kick out of.
Out of what we do and what I do. And so, you know, to share those with her is it's just a barometer, whether it works or not. And the sad thing is she won't tell me when she thinks it's a little bit on the wrong side. I have to have somebody else tell me that. When I write something sometimes for Spaceship One, James come back with a, we can't do that, Dave. We have to do it a different way.
What? You need a meter more than I do? That's incredible. I need somebody to meter me around the house. It's amazing the parrot doesn't cuss like a sailor.
You're not always there, are you?
She has learned the Mean Wife song, which is getting me kind of in hot water.
The Mean Wife song?
Yeah. I teased her once in a while, I'll sing the Mean Wife song. Well, the bird seems to have picked it up. Mean Wife, all her life, she's been a mean wife.
I can see how that could get a lot of trouble.
Yeah,
I can
see
that.
Well, hey, I don't care how old I get. I'm always going to have this little mischievous boy inside of me that has to stir the pot a little bit.
Yeah,
a little tiny bit.
Like Peter Pan, I'm never going to grow up.
That's right. And I'm smooth and creamy, just like Peter Pan. What does that mean?
Really, I thought you'd be the more of the crunchy, nutty.
Yeah, the crusty, crunchy, nutty, kind of nutty.
Hey, you know what's funny? A little factoid, a little peanut butter factoid. East of the Mississippi, the creamy peanut butter is more popular than crunchy. But west of the Mississippi, crunchy peanut butter sells more than creamy peanut butter. So what is it about the Mississippi River that we can all spell eventually because of school? What is it about that river that divides our country between crunchy and creamy peanut butter?
You got me hanging. It just doesn't seem like it should be geographical, cultural, in a certain area.
I'm asking you why, Dale. Why is that? Why is that?
You would ask me that now.
I'm trying
don't
to
ask
here.
Me why. Because he don't know.
There we go.
Oh, come on, Fogsbane. Fogsbane is trying to make a point to it. Shame on you, Fogsbane. This is not a place to make points. No, he says historically available to sugar, maybe. And that may be right.
You and your damn science.
No, we love you, Fogs. Thanks for being here as you are. And as often as you can be here,
he is a bit of a scientist. I have that mischievous part of me too. Likes to chase the wife around the house with the Erie House radio. Squeaky intro and other radio show intros.
You're lucky she doesn't turn around and swat you with the pans.
Well, let's just say I haven't lost my reflexes quite yet.
It's interesting. Some of the videos that Foggs puts up about when he's making something or putting something together, absolutely amazing to see the workings of his. He's just, I don't know whether he's an engineer or what, but he could easily be any of those things.
Yeah, I sense there's maybe some tool and die in there, plus obviously a little computer stuff because all the neat 3D printing. It's good stuff, brother. It's good stuff, you don't know how much we appreciate this stuff. These
and
cool
since he also tunes into this almost every time, he's a bit of a masochist as well.
Yeah, that's right.
He enjoys that pain. The pain, I tell you.
Make it hurt more. Sure. I can do that.
I'm Harry Noonan. Nighty night, night.
Night.
That's right.
Yep, yep. Oh, my. So much fun tonight with CBS Radio Mystery Theater. And, you know, Dale, this one does have a lot of the commercials in it. So maybe we should get kick it off here.
So is this like a gang of crazed gingers? Is that what the Redheaded League is?
No, that's just your latest dream fantasy, Dale.
Yeah, well, maybe.
This is actually from a Sherlock Holmes tale, The Redheaded League. It is it was originally published in the Strand magazine in August of 1891 and was published in 1892. Now, a lot of adaptions that the Mystery Theater does, they turn it many times into a modern day story. Here they left it the way it was. And it's just amazing when you get to the masters like the H.G. Wells and the stories that they did with Sherlock Holmes and such. They left them exactly in the era of which they were made. Wonderful. Kevin McCarthy, I've always liked him. And, of course, he's back again tonight as Sherlock Holmes. He was not always Sherlock Holmes for the Radio Mystery Theater, but he did, the first four or five of them. Wonderful Canadian actor who I just absolutely love. And as you mentioned earlier, starred in the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yep. Good old Kevin. He showed up a lot in some early sci-fi flicks. But that one being his best and biggest roles.
Yes, yes. That would be his one major lead in one of those sci-fi flicks. And he was also in, even in the Twilight Zone movie, he was in the remake of It's a Wonderful Life.
Ah.
He and I think Cloris Leachman showed up in that as well. And she was not only in the original It's a Wonderful Life episode, in the movie version of It's a Wonderful Life, and also in the remake for the WB series of It's a Wonderful Life Again, which starred Billy Mumy and his daughter that was kind of had his role.
Yes, yes.
In that. And Cloris Leachman was again in that. If she was in the movie, which I'm thinking she was, that would have been the trifecta, and nobody else was in all three episodes.
Yep. But we do have a whole lot of radio and some fun, too. Not only am I anxious to hear part one of the Redheaded League, but also our first set of Hair Facts Dave Facts, which will be coming up right after part one of the Redheaded League, CBS Radio Mystery Theater, originally broadcast on
April 26, 1977.
According to some guy in Madagascar.
An unemployed California man says he'll go to any extreme to feed his family, and he's gone to one. Ray Valine has turned his bald head into a billboard and walks around Sacramento on display. His rate per advertisement is $25 a day, and he says he can fit four up there. So far, his clients include a steel company and a saloon. I'm Rita Sand, CBS News.
Cairo News Time, 10:06.
How long has it been since you've seen a really good movie? Since you saw a motion picture that said something about life and love that you carried with you in your heart and mind long after the evening was over? How long has it been since you lost yourself in a story? If it's been too long, then see George C. Scott in Islands in the Stream. From Paramount Pictures, rated PG, parental guidance suggested.
Islands in the Stream opens Friday at the John Dance, Lewis and Clark, Lake City, and Lynn Theaters. Rated PG.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. Good jobs are hard to find. That's just as true today as it was back in 1890. So a man who's offered a rather substantial salary for doing what appears to be very little work is willing to put up with some eccentricities on the part of his employer, even if there's something frightening about working conditions.
Now, Mr. Wilson, this is your office. All you need is the desk, the chair, and the writing equipment.
Yes, sir.
There's one more thing. You must remain right here in this office from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. 6 days a week. Believe me, Mr. Wilson, your very safety lies in your staying put here in this office. Step outside that door, and you step into terror.
Our mystery drama, The Adventure of the Red-Headed League, was adapted from the A. Conan Doyle classic, especially for the Mystery Theater by Murray Burnett, and stars Kevin McCarthy. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and ARM, Allergy Relief Medicine. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Once upon a time, there was a couple with entirely different tastes. One liked exotic things.
I'll have a banana split with chicken livers.
While the other was practical and down to earth.
American cheese on white.
Invariably, the exotic things she liked, he hated.
Oh, look at this, a corduroy rug. Don't you just love it?
No.
And the practical things he liked, she loathed.
I love it.
I hate it.
This went on at length until one day, after disagreeing on how to get there...
It's right.
Left.
They went to a Buick dealer and were invited to inspect a Buick Skyhawk. She found the low, lean styling and things like the bucket seats and standard four-speed manual transmission exciting and exotic.
Oh, it's so exciting and exotic.
While he found the V6 engine, the practical hatchback, very down-to-earth.
Oh, how practical and down-to-earth.
Unfortunately, while they agreed on a Skyhawk, they couldn't agree on which Skyhawk.
Air conditioning.
Heater.
White walls.
Black walls.
Chrome wheels.
Hubcaps.
I want a stereo. We have a radio at home.
Buick Skyhawk. It's exotic, it's practical. It's a little Buick for everybody.
I'll drive.
I'll drive.
No, I'll drive.
I'll drive.
I'm driving.
Recently, the left-handed people of the world have been voicing some legitimate complaints. They feel, with some justice, that they're being penalized for being different, since almost all the gadgets and conveniences of life are built for people who are right-handed. They also feel they're unjustly accused of being less reliable than their right-handed brethren. Whether or not that's a bad rap is open to question, but there are also the so-called hot-tempered redheads who, so far, haven't banded together to object to being thus labeled. But A. Conan Doyle immortalized redheads forever when he pitted the Red-Headed League against the marvelous deductive abilities of the world's greatest detective, Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
I'm Holmes, and this is my colleague, Dr. Watson.
How do you know?
Now, you've told me your name is Jabez Wilson, and beside the obvious facts that you've at some time done manual labor, that you take snuff, that you're a Freemason, that you've been in China, and that you've done a considerable amount of writing lately, I can deduce nothing else about you.
What? How in the name of all that's holy do you know all that? Are you some kind of wizard, Mr. Holmes?
Not at all.
Well, then it's some kind of trick. Oh, certainly I began working in life as a ship's carpenter, but there's no way you could have known that except...
Your hands, my dear sir. Your right hand is at least one size larger than your left.
Oh.
Therefore, you've worked with it. The muscles are obviously more developed.
Oh, well, but the snuff, then, and the Freemasonry.
I won't insult your intelligence by explaining the snuff. As for the Freemasonry, against the strict rules of your order, you use an arc and compass breastpin.
Oh, of course, I forgot that. But the writing, sir.
What else can be indicated by that right cuff? So very shiny for 5 inches, and the left one with the smooth patch near the elbow where you rested it upon a desk?
Yes. But China, that's something quite different.
The fish tattooed immediately above your right wrist could only have been done in China.
Oh.
I've made a small study of tattoo marks, and that trick of staining the fish's scale a delicate pink is quite peculiar to China. When, in addition, I see a Chinese coin hanging from your watch chain, the matter becomes even more simple.
Ah, well, I thought at first you'd done something clever, but I see there was nothing to it after all.
I begin to think, Watson, that I make a mistake in explaining.
Oh, God.
I fear my reputation will suffer shipwreck if I continue to be so candid. But now, Mr. Wilson, what brings you to me?
It was this advertisement here. Read it for yourself, sir.
Thank you. You don't mind if I let Dr. Watson read it?
No, not at all.
To the Red-Headed League. On account of the bequest of the late Ezekiah Hopkins of Lebanon, Pennsylvania, USA, there is now another vacancy open which entitles a member of the League to a salary of £4 a week for purely nominal services. All red-headed men who are sound in body and mind and above the age of 21 are eligible. Oh, my goodness. Apply in person Monday at 11 o'clock to Duncan Ross at the offices of the League, 7 Pope's Court, Fleet Street. What on earth does this mean, Holmes?
It is a little off the beaten track and may well be the start of a very pretty puzzle. Mr. Wilson, tell us all about this strange advertisement and you. Watson, you, of course, noted the date of the newspaper.
Yes, April the 27th, 1890, just 2 months ago.
Excellent, excellent. Now, Mr. Wilson.
Oh, well, I keep a small tobacconist shop at Coburg Square. It's not very large, and it doesn't do more than just give me a living, you know, but since I have a flat above the shop, I make out all right. Well, sir, I used to keep 2 assistants, but now I can only afford 1. And that only because he's willing to work at half wages to get a place to live while he learns the business.
Mm-hmm. What's the name of this obliging youth?
Oh, his name is Vincent Spaulding, and he's not such a youth either. Oh, it's hard to say how old he is, but I tell you, Mr. Holmes, I couldn't have a sharper assistant. Never was such a fella for photography. Snapping away all the time with a camera and then diving down into the cellar to develop his pictures. That's his main fault, but there's no vice in him, you know. As a matter of fact, it was he who called my attention to the advertisement.
Ah. Can you remember how that happened?
Oh, like it was yesterday, Mr. Holmes. I was coming down from my living quarters into the shop when Vincent said...
I wish to heaven, Mr. Wilson, that I was a red-headed man.
Ah? Oh, why on earth should you wish that?
Why? Because here's another vacancy on the League of the Red-Headed Men.
What?
It's worth quite a bit of money to the man who gets it. If only my hair would change colour, it'd be a nice little post all ready for me to step into.
Well, what is this Red-Headed League?
Oh, I'm that surprised you've never heard of it. With your head of red hair, you're eligible for one of the vacancies.
Huh? What's a vacancy worth?
Couple of £100 a year. But the work doesn't interfere with one's other occupations.
Doesn't it? Well, tell me about it. Do you know how it got started?
Well, as far as I know, the League was founded by an American millionaire, Ezekiah Hopkins, who was a real eccentric. He himself was red-headed, and he had a great sympathy for all red-headed men. We never married, had no relatives, and when he died, he left his entire fortune in the hands of trustees with specific instructions to apply the interest only to provide easy jobs to men with red hair.
Oh, but there'll be millions of red-headed men who'll apply.
Oh, not as many as you might think. I believe if you cared to apply, you'd walk away with the job. But perhaps it's not worth your while to put yourself out for the sake of a few £100.
Well, it was certainly true that our visitor's hair was of a particularly brilliant shade of crimson. But to me, the whole business smacked of the ridiculous. I couldn't understand Holmes' keenness in asking Wilson for more details.
Well, you see, Mr. Holmes, since Vincent Spaulding seemed to know so much about it, I figured he might be useful to have along. So I ordered him to put up the shutters for the day and to come along with me.
All right, sirs. This way, if you please. Allow me to introduce myself. I'm Duncan Ross. Give me your hand, Mr. Wilson. Allow me to congratulate you. The vacancy is yours.
What did I tell you?
Are you a married man, Mr. Wilson? Do you have a family?
Well, neither, but Does it make any difference?
Oh, dear me. This is very serious indeed. I'm sorry to hear about your bachelorhood.
But I must explain
that the fund wasn't only set up for providing pleasant jobs for red-headed men, but for the propagation and spread of redheads as well. You must see, this puts me in an awkward position, most awkward.
Well, couldn't there possibly be an exception made, Mr. Ross? I mean, in this case where you have such a magnificent head of hair.
Yes, well... Well, we might stretch a point in your case. Yes, we might. After all, it isn't as if you hated women. You very well may someday marry.
Oh, well, I might, but...
No, let's say no more about it. When can you start?
That might be a problem. You see, I already have a business.
Don't you worry about that, Mr. Wilson. I can look after that for you.
Well, now, what are the hours?
10 a.m. to 2 p.m., 6 days a week.
Now, that might work out. My busiest time is early in the morning and the early evening.
And I can handle the shop while you're away.
Yes, it seems satisfactory. And the pay?
£4 a week.
Ah, and the work?
Purely nominal.
What does purely nominal mean?
Well, you must be in this office the entire time. The will is very clear upon that point. I cannot make it strong enough. If you leave, you lose the position forever.
Oh, I'm sure I'll be able to stay here the whole 4 hours.
And no excuse will prevail. Neither sickness nor business. There's no such thing as an emergency.
Oh, yes, sir, I understand.
Well, I certainly hope you do, Mr. Wilson. I've already made one concession, but there'll be absolutely no others.
I shall abide by the rule, but what is the work?
To copy the entire Encyclopedia Britannia. Now, there is the first volume on that press. You must find your own ink, pens, and blotting paper. We provide the table and the chair, and you agree to start tomorrow. Do we understand each other?
Oh, yes, perfectly, Mr. Ross. And you may depend upon me being here promptly at 10 tomorrow.
A famous old radio show started with these words. Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shadow knows. And indeed he did. But if he knew about the evil in the hearts of men, the world's greatest detective, Sherlock Holmes, knew better than anyone what evil lurked in the minds of men. I'll be back to hear what Sherlock Holmes unravels in The Puzzle of the Red-Headed League. Shortly. Do I, Howard Cosell, possess a truly encyclopedic mentality? No, on the subject of CB radio, I admit profound ignorance. However, many people share this lamentable condition, so for everyone, I question General Electric. Their answers made it obvious why GE is expert in CB. Listen to the words of Andy Kynes, GE product designer.
Andy, do you think only in technical terms, or do you consider the fellow who'll be using your CB?
No, Howard, we never lose sight of him. He's why we do everything we can to make our channel numbers extra legible, why we position our controls so they're easily reached. He's why GE mics are designed for either hand. We even backlight our meters to increase readability.
Powerful arguments for GE, Andy.
The human factor in engineering. Another reason to buy GE CB. This is Howard Cosell saying GE. That's more than you can say about any other CB.
Breaker, breaker, 19. This here's the rubber duck.
Bet you're about to go hunting bear. Bet you're about to go hunting bear. Rubber duck.
How does that take you back a little bit, that CB fad that was running rampant in the 90s? Or, I'm sorry, in the 70s. What's that, the 90s?
My father had one because, again, whenever we drove from Buffalo to Lima where we had family, it was a heck of a long drive back then. And so my dad had one. He just loved listening to the truckers. He never talked to them. He just listened. It was a kind of a voyeur type thing. It's like talk radio is today. Only like 2% of people who actually listen in to talk radio actually call in.
That's about right. Based on what we've been receiving. About 2%.
About 2%, yes. Yeah. Speaking of 2%, We have the first segment of Hair Facts, Dave Facts.
Well, we should have some intro music for this. Hold on.
Okay. Holding.
Here's the first set of Hair Facts, Dave Facts.
Hair Fact. The average person is roughly between 100,000 and 150,000 strands of hair on their head. Dave Fact.
Not anymore.
Tell that to Michael Jordan.
Yes.
Okay, something's going on there. I don't know what's going on there. Hang on. Speakers.
Uh-oh.
There you are. My speakers are on.
Dave.
Okay. All right.
Dave.
Hair Fact. Natural blondes have more than all other colors. Towheads top the charts with 150,000 strands. Brunettes have 100,000 strands. And redheads average about 90,000 strands. Dave Fact. So blondes may not have more fun, but they do have more hair. Hair Fact. Crash dieting can cause temporary hair loss. I may be a 2X guy, but I'll always have a full head of hair. Did I get disconnected? Hello?
No, we're here.
Anybody
we're
else?
Here.
Oh,
we're
okay,
here.
Okay. The silence
gotcha.
Is happening. Hair Fact. A lock of Elvis's hair once sold at auction for $15,000. Dave Fact. And after spending all that money, I still couldn't sing Jailhouse Rock. There you go. First set.
There you go.
Of Hair Facts. Thank you very much.
No, those are good. Good facts. Facts and fun
hey,
with Dave.
Don't worry, they get worse.
I can't wait. The sadistic side of me can't wait to unleash it.
So, yep. Just kind of a, I tell you what, if someone were to call me up if I had red hair and said, look, because you have red hair, you know, we're going to give you hundreds of pounds or hundreds of bucks a year because you have red hair. I would be pretty sure that's a scam. I think people may have been a little bit more trusting, except that he did go to Sherlock Holmes because he just thought it was awful weird.
And weird it is, and it's a weird tale. Let's continue now with our second part of The Redheaded League from CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
My parents raised me like any typically British child. Every day at 4, we had tea and scones. For dinner on Sundays, we had roast beef and Yorkshire pudding and roast goose every Christmas. The only thing different was that I was born in Bellevue, Washington. That's where my parents settled years ago when they came to America from Great Britain. So this year on my vacation, I'm going back to the country I know as well as I do my own. I'm going back to Great Britain to see it for the first time.
There's an airline around, Pan Am, that makes trips like this pretty easy. With frequent schedules and 747s, and fares and Pan Am tours that can save you a lot of money. Every American has two heritages. Pan Am would like to help you discover the other one.
Pan Am is the only airline that flies a big, roomy Boeing 747 nonstop to London every day of the week. Call your travel agent for reservations on Pan Am, the fastest, most convenient way to London and all of Europe.
Mr. Phineas T. Barnum said, there's a sucker born every minute. And one thing's for sure, it's always easy to see the other fellow's mistakes. Certainly Mr. Jabez Wilson seemed to be gullible in swallowing the story about the Redheaded League. But looking at it from his point of view, he was doing nothing wrong, and he was making money at his strange job, obtained in strange fashion. But let's pick up Mr. Wilson as he unfolds the rest of his perplexing tale.
Well, I must say, Mr. Holmes, that I left the office in Pope's Court in very high spirits. Mm-hmm. But when I got home, the more I thought about it, I became convinced the whole thing was some kind of a hoax, you know. But for what reason, I couldn't fathom. However, in the morning, I thought I might as well try it and see what happened.
very sensible, since you had nothing to lose except a trip to Pope's Court. And what happened when you arrived?
To my surprise and delight, everything was as right as rain. Mr. Ross was there to see that I started work. Well, sir, I began with the letter A and worked away quite industriously.
And what about Mr. Ross? Did he stay with you?
Oh, not all the time, but he'd drop in from time to time, you know, to see that everything was all right with me.
And also to see that you lived up to the terms of your employment, no doubt.
I suppose that, too. But at 2 o'clock sharp, he bade me good day, complimented me upon the amount I'd written, and locked the door behind me.
Uh-huh. And did this continue?
Well, not in the same fashion. After a few weeks, he wouldn't drop by quite so frequently. In the last 2 weeks, he didn't come at all. Only on Saturday, when he gave me the 4 golden sovereigns.
You had no curiosity about this position?
Ah, well, to be honest, Mr. Holmes, I had a lot of questions, but the £4 a week stifled my curiosity. After 8 weeks, I'd written about abbots and archery and got all the way to Attica and hoped that I might soon get on to the bees, when suddenly the old business came to an end.
Capital. Capital.
Oh, I can't understand your relation, Mr. Holmes. It certainly shocked me when I came to work early this morning to find the door locked and this little square of cardboard hooked onto the middle with a tack.
Shall I read it, Holmes?
Please, Doctor.
Red-Headed League is hereby dissolved. There may be further communication, but it will be done by post, if at all.
Aha. Did you take any steps when you found this card?
At first, I was completely staggered. Then I went round to the offices in the building, but none of them knew anything at all.
The landlord, did you?
The landlord's an accountant who lives on the ground floor. I asked if he could tell me what had become of the Red-Headed League, but he said he'd never even heard of them.
And your employer, Mr. Duncan Ross?
The landlord said he knew no such gentleman.
Now, come, Mr. Wilson. Your employer must have been known to the landlord. If not by that name, then another.
Oh, exactly, sir. When I described the red-headed gentleman in room number 4, the landlord told me that his name was Charles Morris. He was a solicitor using the room only until his new offices were ready. He moved out yesterday and was at his new address, 17 King Edward Street, near St. Paul's.
And when you got there, the cupboard was bare.
That's right again, sir. It was a manufacturing house.
Oh, dear.
No one had ever heard of Ross or Morris or the League. Oh, I tell you, sir, I was in a state. I hurried back to my shop and started in on Vincent, who kept trying to calm me down.
Now, please, Mr. Wilson, shouting won't do you any good. If you'll only take my advice and wait.
Wait? Wait for what? And what about my salary for the past week, eh? What about that?
Mr. Wilson, the League has been in existence for a number of years, and I'm sure they'll get in touch with you by post.
Well, if the League's been in existence for so long, I can't understand how it's been such a well-kept secret.
Well, now, Mr. Wilson, you must admit that you're not much of a man for going around. Why, since I first came here, you rarely put your foot out of doors.
I'll confess you have something there.
And that's why you've never heard of the League. But I assure you, it's been well known and highly regarded for a long time.
All right, since you know so much, can you explain what happened?
No, sir. I cannot. But I'm willing to wager that you will hear from them again. I just hope that it won't be what I fear.
Eh? What's that?
You remember when you got the job, there was some question about your marital status? Now, I'm not saying this is so, but it's just possible that the entire board may have had some second thoughts and overruled Mr. Ross' decision about taking you on.
Oh, well, if that's the case, I should have a chance to explain. Perhaps I could set their minds at rest.
How do you mean?
Well, it just so happens that that recently I have encountered a young lady who I think might just be suitable I have been thinking about marriage.
Oh, now that's an important factor, Mr. Wilson, very important. And I feel that somehow the League should be informed of your intentions.
Well. How and when did romance enter your life, Mr. Wilson?
Mr. Holmes, it was most peculiar. As you could, I'm generally a stay-at-home, you know, but being cooped up in that office every day for so long made me want to stretch my legs a bit. And this one evening...
How come, Mr. Wilson? There's no need to be embarrassed about romance, eh, Watson?
No, quite so.
Well, as I tell you, it sounds like she... You see, there was this lady, not a young flippity-jibbit, but a mature lady, you know, and she stumbled.
Oh, dear.
And I managed to keep her from taking quite a spill, and since we seem to have a lot in common...
Was she a redhead?
No. But at any rate, we hit it off, and I began to see quite a bit of her, and, well, hang it all, I'm thinking of marrying her.
Did you and your lady ever discuss the Red-Headed League?
Well, I may have mentioned it, but we didn't dwell on it.
Can you recall her reaction?
No. No, and I can't see how she has anything to do with the matter at hand.
Perhaps not. At any rate, Mr. Wilson, today is Friday, and if you'll see me on Monday... We may have some answers for you.
Do you think that I should...
You should go back to your shop and take care of your business.
After our red-headed visitor had left, Holmes sat with his lean figure hunched in his chair and his eyes closed. Suddenly he opened his eyes and asked...
Well, Watson, what do you make of it?
No, I make nothing of it, Holmes. It's a most mysterious business that seems to have no rhyme or reason.
As a rule, the more bizarre a thing is, the less mysterious it proves to be. But I feel that this may very well be a serious matter. And if what I fear to be true is true, there's little time left.
What do you propose to do?
To smoke. It's quite a three-pipe problem, and I beg that you don't speak to me for 50 minutes.
With his thin knees drawn up to his hawk-like nose and his eyes closed and his black clay pipe thrusting out like the bill of some strange bird, my friend sat lost in thought. Suddenly, he sprang out of the chair, put his pipe down on the mantelpiece and said...
What do you think, my dear doctor? Could your patient spare you for a few hours?
Oh, I have nothing to do today. My practice is never very absorbing.
Good. Then come along.
We traveled by underground as far as Aldersgate, and then a short walk took us to Saxe Coburg Square. It was a pokey little shabby genteel place with four lines of dingy two-storied brick houses. We stood across the street from the corner house, on which one could read Jabez Wilson, tobacconist. My companion stood carefully scrutinizing the houses. Well, what are you looking at, Holmes?
The houses and shops and the names.
Well, surely you know the name of Jabez Wilson.
This is a time for observation. We are, so to speak, in enemy country. Now, let's reconnoiter. Now, there's Mortimer's, the pawnbroker's, a vegetarian restaurant, the Coburg branch of the City and Suburban Bank, and McFarland Brothers, architects. Have you any interest in architecture, Doctor?
No, I can't say that I have, no.
Well, that's a pity, because at this moment, that's our destination.
I wondered what in the world Holmes wanted with a firm of architects. But as we approached the door, I was amazed to see the familiar figure of Athelney Jones, the detective from Scotland Yard. My surprise was equaled by Jones.
If it isn't Mr. Sherlock Holmes, what brings you to this part of London?
I might ask the same question of you.
Oh, purely a routine matter. A stupid attempt at robbery, although why in the world any criminal would want to break into McFarland Brothers beats me.
This was recent?
No, I've just come down to tell the owners that our investigations haven't turned up anything and that we'd best forget it for a while.
I'm curious. Could you give me some details?
Oh, it's really not in your line, Mr. Holmes. But here are the facts. A couple of months ago, the night watchman was making his usual rounds
when he came upon two men trying to open the safe in the offices of McFarland. Although there's no cash and no securities, in fact, nothing of any value.
Ah, that does seem stupid. And what happened?
They overpowered, bound, and gagged the watchman, left him in the outer room, and then left without taking anything because there was nothing missing from the safe in the morning.
Was a thorough check made?
Oh, come, Mr. Holmes. Every penny accounted for.
Well, since you came down here to report failure, I assume that the night watchman didn't give you much of a description of the robbers.
No, it was the usual meaningless jabber. No good to us at all. One thing, though, they weren't amateurs. They used gloves so as not to leave fingerprints.
That's very significant.
To you, maybe, Mr. Holmes, but to us it's normal. The usual procedure of professionals.
Quite so. Well, come along, Watson. There's nothing more that we can do here.
But, Holmes, what about your interest in architecture and our visit to McFarland?
My dear doctor, we must remain flexible if we're to get to the bottom of the matter we're investigating.
Oh,
so,
yes, sir.
Let's say goodbye to Inspector Jones.
Now, hold on a minute, Mr. Holmes. This matter you're investigating, is it something that Scotland Yard might be interested in?
It very well may be, Inspector, but before I call on you for help, I have to prove my theory beyond a shadow of a doubt. That was a most informative discussion we had with Jones, don't you think, Doctor?
Well, you consider a bungled burglary and a failure on the part of the police informative, I suppose you can call it that.
Oh, my dear chap, how can you listen and not hear?
Well, I heard every word that was said.
You don't think it instructive that an obvious pair of professional thieves who are careful enough to wear gloves select an unlikely target, such as an architect's office, as a likely place for a haul?
Everybody makes mistakes.
Very true, Watson, but mark you, they tie the men up, open the safe, and don't touch the cash.
Well, because it wasn't worthwhile taking.
Ah? I put it to you, Watson, that it was a very successful robbery.
Oh, dear.
That the thieves got exactly what they wanted. And if what I suspect is true, the watchman is lucky to be alive.
What in the world were they after?
You know my methods, Watson. You have all the information I have. All that's necessary is for you to think.
Yeah.
But here we are, outside our destination.
Well, why on earth are you beating the pavement with your stick?
Part of my observations, Doctor. Now let's see the inside of Mr. Wilson's establishment.
Yes, gentlemen. What can I do for you?
I'm sorry to bother you. We only wish to know how to get from here to the Strand.
A third right, fourth left, and you're on the Strand.
Thank you. Smart fellow, that. In my judgment, he's the fourth smartest man in London. And for daring, I'm not sure that he hasn't a claim to be third.
Evidently, Mr. Wilson's assistant counts for a good deal in this affair of the Red-Headed League. I'm sure that you asked your way only in order to see him.
Not him.
Huh? Well, what then?
The knees of his trousers.
Not only Watson, but all the millions of Sherlock Holmes fans are familiar with his methods. You, like Watson, have all the information. All you have to do is apply the science of deductive reasoning, as expounded so often and so well by Sherlock Holmes, and you'll come up with the answer as to why Holmes was interested in the knees of Vincent Spaulding's trousers. You'll find out whether you are right or not when I return shortly with Act 3.
Moog means mileage.
Moog, one of the leading manufacturers of steering and suspension parts, wants you to know how to get the most mileage from your tires. Misalignment can be your tire's worst enemy. Only an alignment specialist can correct it. He knows you can't properly align a car when the parts that hold alignment are excessively worn.
he'll make sure all the connecting links in the front end of your car are sound and dependable. Only then can you get the kind of alignment that will help you get maximum tire mileage. Poor alignment can chew up tires fast and threaten steering control. Alignment should be checked at least twice a year by an alignment specialist who will replace excessively worn parts with improved parts by Moog. Moog. M-O-O-G. The right name for wheel-to-wheel security.
Oh, I got some excessively worn parts that need replaced.
Okay, you worry about your reward. I tell you one thing, I never look to check a guy's knees, pants. Not a guy's anyway. You know?
Anyway, hello. Hey there, sailor.
Hey. I don't know why I would say something like that, but Dale does. Ah, let's see.
Yes, he does. I'm wired like that. All right. Well, we're two-thirds of the way done. We should probably have a few more facts, no?
A few more hair facts, day facts, waiting for that fanfare. Hair fact. The average human will grow 590 miles worth of hair during their lifetime. Day fact. I wonder how many miles per gallon of Brill cream you get on that kind of mileage. Hair fact. A 16th century doctor claimed that you could restore hair by applying boiled slugs, olive oil, honey, saffron, soap, and cumin to the scalp. Dave fact, didn't actually restore hair, but it did make some interesting salad dressing. Hair fact, hair can absorb 30% of its weight in water. Dave fact, that's nothing. You should see me guzzle Mountain Dew. And hair fact, a whole head of hair can support up to 12 tons, the weight of two elephants. Dave fact, sounds interesting. I think I'll take my ex to the zoo to see if that's true.
Oh, Dave, you're so bad.
My stars, where did you ever get that awful hairdo? It doesn't become you at all. Yeah, for goodness sake, let me fix it up. Look how stringy and messy it is. What a shame. Such an interesting monster, too. My stars, if an interesting monster can't have an interesting hairdo, then I don't know what things are coming to. In my business, you meet so many interesting people. Bobby pins, please. But the most interesting ones are the monsters. Oh, dear, that'll never stay. We'll just have to have a permanent... Now, I've got to give an interesting old lady a manicure. But I'll
Here
be back
comes.
Before you're done.
There you go. Nice tennis shoes on that monster. Nice tennis shoes.
Nice tennis shoes, yes. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That was even
yep.
Before Air Jordans, you had monster tennis shoes.
That's true. Yep. And that and way back in the 50s, we had Bigfoot with about size 23 sneakers. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
According to Stan Freberg, and they interviewed
Bigfoot
in
my ad yesterday. The ad for yesterday.
Abominable Snowman.
Anybody see the little Bigfoot I put in the ad yet in yesterday's?
In the slide or in the ad?
In the ad.
Ah.
Take a look at yesterday's ad. There's Bigfoot hiding in there.
I think, we had Bigfoot hiding in there. Okay.
Yeah.
There he's hiding. Pretty good for me.
To celebrate the hairiness, you know. I thought Chewbacca would be too obvious. I went with Bigfoot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty darn obvious. Yep.
Okie doke. Let's, see how Sherlock Holmes resolves this issue. And we got more fun. We got more hair facts and day facts and a bonus one from Baker's
Dozen. A bonus fact. Yep. is your warning to turn your radio down for 1 second as we get to the bonus fact. But, hey, we got the part three of our Sherlock Holmes adventure coming up first.
Here it comes. We'll be back.
Denny's is a happy place to eat. And one reason is we've always got exciting new foods for you, like our New York Super Steak, hot buttered crumb cakes, and brand new late night features. But at Denny's, some things never change. We're always open. There's always a smile and a welcome to Denny's. And always old favorites like Denny's famous breakfasts, hearty hamburgers, a dozen delicious dinners, great soups and salads, unique sandwiches, and luscious desserts. And of course, ice cold Coca-Cola. Good food, good times, around the clock.
We got happy places, smiling faces, welcome to Denny's. We're looking good and cooking good, welcome to Denny's.
In Bellevue, there's a Denny's at Highway 405 and Northeast 8, and another Denny's in downtown Seattle at Terry and Mercer.
At the risk of being labeled a male chauvinist, I submit that writers of detective fiction believe that thinking and women are incompatible. To prove my thesis, let me point out that the three greatest thinking detectives of all times, Sherlock Holmes, Nero Wolfe, and Arsène Lupin, avoided involvements with the opposite sex. They must have believed that romantic involvement would, in some way, affect their judgment. At any rate, in today's story, Holmes is concentrating on red-headed males, and we find him and Dr. Watson in their Baker Street flat.
Holmes had been poring over a map of London streets for some time, and also had a back issue of the Times open to the financial page, when he finally folded the map, looked up, and said with a sigh of satisfaction,
"I think there's no chance of my being wrong now."
"Oh, I'm sure you're right, but I'm blessed if I know what you're right about."
"Can't be the visitors I'm expecting, but come in."
"Vincent Spaulding was right, Mr. Holmes, and so were you. I've heard from the Red-Headed League."
"Indeed."
"There's to be a weekend meeting starting tonight at the Cork and Bottle in Surrey."
"Surrey?"
"Reservations have been made for me, and then they'll discuss my problem." "Well, what do you think of that, Mr. Holmes?"
"How did they get in touch with you?"
"Oh, by post, as they said they would. I brought the letter with me. Would you care to see it?"
"No, I don't think that's necessary."
But I'll come to you for advice, and here you are...
"Mr. Wilson, I think that I can assure you that I will have the answers you want by the end of this weekend."
"But what about this note? Should I go or not?"
"I insist that you go. But if you want the answer to your problems, don't expect to find it in Surrey."
After Holmes had persuaded a reluctant Jabez Wilson to keep his weekend rendezvous in Surrey, and he'd rushed off, I looked at Holmes. "Holmes, I'll confess that this nonsensical charade of the Red-Headed League seems to me to be just a silly kind of game."
"On the contrary, my dear Watson, it's serious. Very serious indeed."
"Oh, dear."
"You characterize this as a charade, and your instincts are always good. The whole device used to get our friend Wilson away from his shop for 4 hours a day was staged, and quite brilliant."
"But why in the world would anyone want that? There's nothing in that shop or house of any value."
"Think, Doctor. Remember I observed that the knees of Vincent Spaulding's trousers were covered with dust and badly worn?"
"Yes."
"Add to that his habit of rushing down to the cellar at every opportunity."
"Ah, of course. Buried treasure."
"You're an incurable romantic, Doctor, but at that, you're not too far off the mark. And that, I think, signals the arrival of our companions for this evening's hunt. Will you be kind enough, Doctor?"
"Come in, gentlemen."
"Now our party is complete, Watson. I think you know Inspector Jones of Scotland Yard. Let me introduce you to Mr. Merriweather, who will accompany us tonight."
"How do you do?"
"We're hunting in couples again, Doctor, you see. Our friend Holmes is a wonderful man for starting the chase.
All he wants is an old dog to help him do the running down.
I hope we don't find a wild goose at the end of our chase. Bankers don't place too much trust in theories and fantasies, Inspector. They're interested only in cold facts.
And cold cash also, eh, Mr. Merriweather?
Well, that's why I allowed the inspector to persuade me into coming. Although it's the first Saturday night in 27 years I haven't played bridge. I miss that, Mr. Holmes.
Well, I think you'll find you're playing for a higher stake tonight than you've ever done before. And that the play will be more exciting.
And what do you think the stakes are?
£30,000.
How do you arrive at that figure?
Isn't it true that some months ago you had occasion to strengthen the resources of your branch of the City and Suburban Bank? And according to the Times here, you borrowed 30,000 napoleons from the Bank of France?
No, that's fairly common knowledge, sir. As a matter of fact, there's been some discussion among our directors about the wisdom of keeping so much bullion on a single branch.
A discussion which was very well justified. I have reason to believe that an attempt will be made upon that bullion this very night.
Oh, that's ridiculous. We have the best protective service in the City of London. The cases containing the bullion have never been unpacked. We're absolutely immune to any attempt at such a theft.
I beg to differ, Mr. Merriweather. Come in. What's this? A telegram. Now, give it here, lad. And this is for you. The fool. Ah, this may spoil everything.
What is it, Holmes?
Our friend Wilson arrived in Surrey and found he was the only guest expected. He's furious. And returning to London tonight, he must be stopped at all costs.
Well, that's hardly possible, unless he isn't already on the train.
Well, if he returns to his shop, we may miss our chance to lay these fellows by the heels. His life is also very much in danger.
Inspector, you didn't tell me there might be some physical danger in this situation.
Not to you, Mr. Merriweather. They don't know you, but if this Vincent Spaulding is the man I believe him to be, murder isn't beyond him. And if Jabez Wilson interrupts those plans, Spaulding would think nothing of killing him. Well, here, let's see. From Surrey. Earliest train out. Wouldn't get in before 10 tonight. Capital. Watson, get down to Waterloo Station and intercept Wilson.
Yes.
Then join us in Saxe Coburg Square in front of the bank as soon as you can. We don't go in until we hear from you that Wilson is safe.
I was at Waterloo Station in time to meet the train from Surrey. I just hoped that Wilson would be on it. There was a later train, but that would have meant Holmes and the others would be forced to wait until I arrived, and Holmes seemed to feel there was a chance that we might miss the scoundrels we were after. Well, unfortunately, I spotted his flaming red hair.
Oh, why, Dr. Watson, I hardly expected to be met.
Yes, right. Well, Sherlock Holmes sent me. He says it's vital that you don't go back to your house tonight.
Now, what nonsense is that?
Well, it is for your own good. If you go home, Holmes feels you're in grave danger.
Oh, well, nothing's going to stop me from sleeping in my own bed tonight. If your detective friend thinks I'm in danger, let him protect me.
Well, that's why I'm here.
All right, fine, then. Come along home with me.
Well, now, look here. Holmes has put a lot of work for you in this, and he thinks we're going to be able to bring things to a successful conclusion tonight, if you do as he asks.
Well, if I don't?
Well, then I shall have you arrested. You can spend the night safely in a cell.
But, Dr. Watson, where shall I go?
You can come with me. I'll drop you off at our rooms in Baker Street. And that's the way it was arranged. I dropped Wilson at Baker Street and then hastened to Coburg Square when I saw Holmes, Jones and Merriweather waiting. This will do, my man. Right here is fine.
Ah, Watson, I knew I could rely on you. Where did you leave our friend Jabez Wilson?
At our rooms, Holmes. I promised we would get back at the conclusion of this affair and fill him in.
Well done, Watson. Come along. Mr. Merriweather, you must lead the way.
We shan't need a light till we reach the gate at the bottom of the steps. Mind your feet here. The stairs are narrow. Inspector, I think it's time for you to light your lantern. We can use it down here to open the gate.
We shall certainly need it in the cellar. Mr. Merriweather conducted us down a dark, earth-smelling passage into a huge paved vault or cellar, which was piled all around with crates and massive boxes.
Would you mind holding the lantern up for a moment so that I can get a better view of the ceiling, Mr. Merriweather?
Well, as you wish, Mr. Holmes.
You're not very vulnerable from above, at any rate.
Nor from below. Oh, dear me. This sounds quite hollow.
I really must ask you to be more quiet. Now, you've already imperiled the success of our whole expedition. Have the goodness to sit down upon one of those boxes and do not interfere.
Holmes fell to his knees on the floor and with the lantern and magnifying glass began to examine minutely the cracks between the stones.
I suspect we have at least an hour's wait. When they start, they won't lose a minute, however. But the sooner they complete their work, the more time they'll have for their escape.
They'll need a great deal of time, if your theories are correct, Mr. Holmes. The crate on which I sit contains 2,000 napoleons packed between layers of lead foil. There are 15 of these crates altogether. Now you imagine these so clever thieves are going to transport them is beyond me.
That problem concerns me too, but I'm afraid that we shan't have the answer until we've bagged the men themselves. In order to make sure that there'll be no slip-up, I must ask you, Mr. Merriweather, to put the screen over that lantern.
And sit in the dark?
I'm afraid so. Our thieves' plans have gone so far we dare not risk a light. I suggest you conceal yourself behind that packing case, Mr. Merriweather. Watson and Jones and I will also find places of concealment. And, Doctor, if the men fire, have no compunction about shooting them down.
If there's anyone to shoot at, this whole fantastic scheme isn't the product of your fevered imagination.
Fortunately, I do my work for pleasure alone, Mr. Merriweather. Let me use this part of our wait by asking you some questions.
As you wish.
Why would anyone pay a man £4 a week to copy the Encyclopedia Britannia?
Unless he were demented, I cannot imagine.
Or unless he wanted to be sure that man wouldn't interfere with the work he had in mind.
What work?
In a moment. Why would professional thieves bind a watchman, open a safe, and take nothing?
Ask Inspector Jones. I'm no good at riddles.
Well, then I shall ask you a question I believe you can answer. Who were the architects for this building?
Well, of course I know that. The McFarlane brothers.
Exactly. The McFarlane brothers' premises were the ones invaded by the robbers. I'm sure they either took or made copies of the plans for this building. No, Mr. Merriweather. The facts will bear only one interpretation. Some very astute thieves have been tunneling under the street for the past 2 months. And tonight, there will be an attempt made on the bullion.
You've convinced me, Mr. Holmes.
Have you done what I asked about Wilson's shop in Coburg Square, Inspector?
Aye. There's a constable and two officers waiting at the front door.
Well, then they've stopped all the holes. Now, we must be silent and wait.
I placed my revolver, cocked, upon the top of the wooden case behind which I crouched. We waited there in the cold, dank air of the vault with only the smell of hot metal to assure us that the lamp was still there ready to flash on at a moment's notice. Well, suddenly, my eyes caught the glint of light. At first, it was but a spark, and then it became a yellow line until, with a rending, tearing sound, one of the paving stones turned over on its side. And a wooden projectile of some sort appeared. And then, a man.
All right. Give me a hand with the sled and the wheels, Archie.
Everything clear up there?
All clear. Swing up the ropes and the chisel.
You're under arrest.
Archie, he got me, but you get away.
I very much doubt it. There are three men waiting for him at the door of the shop, Spalding. Alias John Clay.
And who are you? Head house, me by name.
Sherlock Holmes. At your service. A detective who's been following your career with interest and whose pleasure it is to end it here tonight.
The Adventure of the Red-Headed League was written back in 1890. And yet, last year, we read of two daring robberies in France where exactly the same methods were employed. Tunnels were dug under streets, connecting with sewers, and then on up into the vaults of two banks. The only thing missing was the Red-Headed League. I'll be back shortly.
Yes.
Remember your last hay fever attack? Your medicine turned out to be just antihistamine.
Yes.
Next time, arm yourself with ARM, Allergy Relief Medicine. One tablet helps itching, dripping, sneezing, then does what your plain antihistamine won't do for congestion relief, even in your sinuses. Remember,
don't give up. Arm yourself with ARM.
Get antihistamine relief and more. Take ARM when needed, only as directed. Right now, Goodyear is cutting the deck and dealing. It's your chance to get a super low price on a Goodyear lube job and oil change. Here's the deal. Get a complete chassis lubrication and an oil change with up to 5 quarts of 10W30 oil for $4.88 at your nearby Goodyear service store. Come on in. Goodyear. It's the only game in town.
Today, Bensonville, Kentucky died, wiped out by a devastating plague that breaks down immunity to any disease.
What's happening to me?
Tomorrow, it will be Bridgeton, Minnesota, then San Salino, California, and only the deadly Messiah knows why.
Please help!
The Deadly Messiah from Avon Paperbacks, the one novel you will read this year as though your life depended on it. And maybe, just maybe, it does.
Help!
Conan Doyle was never noted as a man with a great sense of humor, but that's only because he rarely employed it in his writing. As a matter of fact, he had a keen wit. The proof? In his first year of independent medical practice, before he started writing, his earnings were exactly £154. When he filed his tax return, he showed that he owed no tax at all because of his earnings. The authorities returned his form with the words, "Most unsatisfactory," scrawled across it. He sent it back with his own comment, which was, "I entirely agree." Our cast included Kevin McCarthy, Court Benson, Robert Dryden, and Ian Martin. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by General Electric Citizen Band Radios. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
K-I-R-O, Seattle.
Okay. Do we have a moral, Dave? Or shall we get back to the facts?
I have no morals, but I do have this fun little fact here. All this whole time, and all many times have I heard this, I never stopped to think, it doesn't sound like 4 pounds is a whole heck of a lot that they're making all this fuss over. So what I did is I went back and found out, compared 1891 pound to what a pound would be in 2018. It comes out to 1 pound equals 125.45 pounds of 1891. So 4 pounds would be 491.8 pounds, which would be $697.84. a week to spend 20 hours writing the Encyclopedia Britannica, copying it by hand.
Nice.
Is that worth hand cramp or what?
Yeah, I think I'd do it.
And if you're lucky, because it's coming from a fund like that, supposedly, it would be tax-free. Especially
That's
if you
the
don't
best
declare.
Best money in the world. Best money in the world.
So, yes, indeed, we are now down to our last, our very last four and bonus hair facts, day facts, as soon as we hear. Here we go.
I was ready for you, brother.
Gender and age cannot be identified by the strand of hair. Day fact. Take that, CSI. Hair fact. In ancient Rome, women dyed their hair with pigeon droppings. Day fact. It also worked as a great form of birth control back then. Hair fact.
Ew.
Scientists have discovered that people with higher IQs have more zinc and copper in their hair. Day fact. What the heck is that supposed to mean? Hair fact.
I don't
Men
know.
Grow hair faster than women. Day fact. This fact has caused more jealousy in a marriage than receipts from the no-tell motel. And...
Wow. And we lost Dave. Oh, no. We lost our best fact. Dave, come back. It's like Shane. Shane, come back. Come back. That's all right. Got a little something for you while we're waiting for Dave to rejoin us here in the studio.
Hello, everybody. Hello. Hello is the shampoo that glorifies your hair. So hello, everybody. Hello. With softer, lively curls and brighter, sparkling hair. So hello, everybody. Hello. Hello, shampoo. Hello.
And returning just in time for the extra bonus hair fact, day fact.
I didn't know at which point I got cut off. Okay, the bonus hair fact, day fact. Hair fact, the anticipation of sex makes hair grow faster. Day fact, I guess that explains why so many married men have such shorter hair. That's easy for you to say.
Yes.
Sometimes the truth hurts a bit, doesn't it?
Ouch. It does.
Here we are. I thought I had gotten all that in, and then all of a sudden I looked up and my thing disappeared from the on the air, and I was still showing it was going on in the other room. So I had to disconnect because I was disconnected and then reconnect and just got the end of the Halo commercial.
Ah, yes. Well, I looked up and it was Dave, go bye-bye. Uh-oh. Let's buy him a little time.
Yeah. Trying to build up that expectation there, but yeah.
And it was good anyway.
Yes. All right. So, boy, we still got some fun time left here, Dale. We got a good full 12 minutes. What shall we do?
Let us meditate and chant. Om.
That's a long 12 minutes. Om.
What you talking about, Will?
All right, what do we do next?
Okay, yeah. That's enough meditating. It hurts our head.
It hurts, yes. That means that requires thinking.
Yeah. Let's just do a montage of stuff. I'm going to just grab this wheel right now and give it a spin.
Okay.
Around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Do this, don't do this, don't do that. Big
cigarette. He must have just forgot to say how sick a guy could get. Big people won't reach me. And boy, was that a big mistake. At least they could have stayed and helped me catch my garter snake. Big people don't do right. If you got the flu, please won't scold me. Big people just throw me.
Here's another hair product.
But now, 2 points that'll pay every driver to remember. If you want to be sure you're getting the tops in quality when you buy gasoline. One, in gasoline, it takes extra quality to give you extra mileage, to go farther. And two, Signal is the famous go farther gasoline. After all, the only way any gasoline can put more thrilling performance into your car is by helping your motor run more efficiently. And when your motor runs more efficiently, naturally, you get better mileage. So mileage is really the best yardstick of gasoline quality. That's why we're so proud of Signal's good mileage. And it's why Signal says, when you buy gasoline for your car, to be sure you're getting the tops in quality, there are just two things to remember. One, in gasoline, it takes extra quality to go farther. And two, throughout the West, from Canada to Mexico, Signal is the famous go farther gasoline.
That's right, and always take it on a date. Maybe she'll go farther. Hey! Stop that, Dale K.
The go farther gasoline. Oh, go farther gasoline, yeah. But if you don't go farther, then you run out of gas, and you have a different situation there.
If you don't go farther, you're walking home, lady. What? All right!
whatever shall we do to make up time for help to arrive?
Mills Brothers.
But here's
good,
old,
yeah, sounds great to me.
But here's an old song, Lawrence. I think you said it was your favorite, Paper Doll.
I'm gonna buy a paper doll. Get a seal.
I do not blame you.
And then the flirty, flirty guys with their flirty, flirty eyes will have to flirt with dollies that are real. When I come home at night, she will be waiting.
Oh, will she?
She'll be the truest doll in all this world. I'd rather have a paper doll to call my own than have a fickle, flattered real life girl.
I guess I had a million dolls or more. I guess I played the lonely board and door. I just wore and that's why I'm blue. She's gone away and left me just like all dolls do. I'm telling you boys, it's tough to be alone, and it's tough to love a doll that's not your own. I'm through with all of them. I'm she will be waiting. She
the paper doll to call my own. And if a big gold mine let me love you.
Oh. Yeah.
Hey,
Mills,
those brothers,
favorite
of mine, paper doll.
Those brothers from, yeah, from good old Piqua, Ohio, the Mills Brothers. Always, always, always one of my favorite singing groups.
And did, before that, did I hear Dennis the Menace?
That was Dennis the Menace, Jay North singing Big People.
Yeah, how
or
about
Big
that?
Big People Bug Me or something like that. So, yeah, but, that was interesting. I watched a story about him, and boy, he's just one of those child actors that never did well after his cuteness left.
Yes.
I guess is what you would say. We had talked about that not long ago, how Billy Mumy and Ron Howard, little Ronnie Howard, had survived it so well, where so many others had not. And I think it's
like
probably
brother,
the way that they're
like
treated.
Brother Clint.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
actually,
yeah.
Clint got a few roles. He just was not a good
he did.
Looking kid. He was a weird looking kid. Hey,
yeah,
Dave.
Mostly got work because of his brother. Yes, yes.
Dave. It's Memorial Day weekend, and you know what that means.
It
it's
is.
The end of May, and next month is June. What does June bring to mind?
Well, June brides.
And that's a good topic, Dave. I don't know what made me think of it.
I don't know either.
Yeah, it's June is for brides here at Erie House. That's right. Murder at Midnight with Till Death Do Us Part, The Weird Circle, The Spectre Bride, and Inner Sanctum, The Scream. And CBS Radio Mystery Theater returns next Saturday right here. So that'll round out a matrimonial-type weekend.
Yes, it will. And on Memorial Day, Monday Memorial Day, 9 p.m., you'll be able to see the latest Weirdness Really Bad movie, The Black Doll, filmed from the Troll Hole Museum in Alliance, Ohio. It is a Guinness Book of World Records collection of troll dolls. And that will be on the Vortex, horrorhost.net, on Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
You should always visit the Vortex. They're great folks and with great programming. Obviously, if they're putting on Weirdness Really Bad. Hey, Brother Gar, yeah. Coming up in about a minute and a half, a little less.
Yep.
Over at them, their
yep.
Twitches, we hope. And we haven't heard anything bad, so we expect them to be on. We'll see you next weekend as we do June Brides. We've got other stuff coming up this June. We'll be going up into the mountains. We'll be disappearing. Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
All kinds of fun stuff. Yep. And right after we get married.
Some guests in the future. Too soon to
yes.
mention their names yet until we get something a little more concrete, like a date. Then we'll make the grand announcement or announcements, perhaps plural.
Absolutely. So all kinds of fun. If it's holding true, it's just about time for Vince to come in there, Dale, if our time is holding true.
Yeah, if our clock is right. It totally messed us up yesterday. Vince, take it home, baby.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone.
Got to ad-lib now.
Don't come alone.
Wow. Yesterday we ran out of time. Now we don't. What's the matter?
I'm Harry, high and low.
There we go. Oh, yes. It was a fun night. It's always fun on Erie House.
It is
for me. I just I look forward to this. This is like my whole thing every weekend. This is what I look forward to.
You poor guy.
Spending, CW joined us later. I failed to mention earlier.
Yep.
I should have.
Fogs Bay made it through the whole night.
When I type, I just stop talking.
Ah, okay. Every time that happens now, I look over to see, am I connected? I looked in two places to see if I'm connected. One of them will go off before the other one.
Funny. When my fingers start going, my mouth, if you ever want to shut me up, give me something to type.
So interesting show tonight. I never even thought about that 4 pounds being an issue, but 4 pounds turned into about $700 a week. Was that 4 pounds a week or 4 pounds a day?
I don't recall.
I don't recall either.
It's a lot of money to scribble down and just repeat the.
The Encyclopedia Britannica, they really wouldn't get their money's worth out of me because they wouldn't be able to read my chicken scratch anyway.
I'd be trying to invent the Xerox.
Have to get Ugg out there on that. I almost had Ugg invent the comb this weekend.
Oh, that would have been great.
Almost, but we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, we haven't heard from Ugg in a while.
We haven't. He's my favorite inventor of all time.
Yes.
Because everything that you do back in caveman days can be an invention. So that's why.
Pretty much. Yeah. This is new. This is new. This is new.
Yeah. That's so true. So true. So true.
I'd like to think caveman days were more like it's about time.
Yeah. Ooh, 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 ooh.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Sherwood Schwartz. What a guy. What a guy.
Yep.
Brought us
amazing.
Such
great programming. Lasted a whole season of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't have the run Gilligan's Island did, that's for sure.
It did not. And it didn't have the run his Brady Bunch had either.
No, that was another good
hit. You can usually tell a Sherwood Schwartz show because it started off giving the premise to the show so they wouldn't have to go over that every time because they already went over it in the show opening.
Yeah, it's part of the theme.
This is how we got here. On the pilot of the Gilligan's Island, it was just about the same words, but it was done in Calypso instead of like a sailor's theme type thing where it became. But it was done like in Calypso.
Yeah. Yeah, that first episode was interesting, too, because you actually saw the minnow on the beach.
Yeah, and they even used some of that original pilot when they reshot around it to the other people who were in. Jim Backus and what's her name were still in, but in the pilot. But the girls were both different, as was the... The professor was just a high school science teacher.
He got an upgrade.
So, he got an upgrade to a professor, right, yeah.
Yeah, who could make anything. Like, he even made a car out of coconuts.
He could, but you know what? The man couldn't find a way off the island.
Couldn't get off the island. But, boy, he could make stuff out of coconuts.
The only thing I can make out of coconuts is a clippity-clop sound.
You know, other than monsoons or something like that, why get rescued? You got all the coconuts you can stand, bananas. You got Marianne and Ginger. You got...
Yeah, that's true.
You know, why go anywhere? And as far as Marianne and Ginger, what kind of competition is there? You got a professor who's very shy. No big competition with the skipper and Gilligan, and of course Mr. Howell's married.
Yes,
so
yes.
There you go. So are you Ginger or Marianne, Dave?
It depends on the mood I'm in, but usually it was Marianne. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she was just nicer. She just seemed more sincere.
Nicer, but if you weren't, but if you were in for a not so nicer girl, then it was always then it was Ginger for me.
Yeah, when you want a bad girl, Ginger Grant is the one to go. That's the way to go.
That is the way to go.
Yeah,
but most generally it was Marianne. She actually she had just won a big beauty contest before that the show before being cast in the show. So it was not like she was a non-looker or anything like that.
Kept her looks for quite a while, I think.
She kept her looks pretty much her whole life. And even when she passed, she was what was she? She was close to 80 or so. And she was still posting on Facebook and such. The COVID did take her. But even as she just got COVID, she went on Facebook to make an announcement. I thought she looked pretty darn good there. And she had the COVID even.
Boy.
I think she always retained her. Now, Ginger did not always do so well. I've seen her in a few things after that, and she didn't age quite so well.
That, and I think she didn't do well professionally either afterwards, from what I understand. She was a bit difficult to work with.
I think she had been difficult to work with before the show, and then when she found out the show wasn't about her, and she thought it was her show, and then somebody says, you know what, that's why it's called Gilligan's Island, not Ginger's Island.
Yeah,
that's,
there you
go. She didn't realize it until somebody told her that. She never realized it. I think she always kind of thought she was a bigger star than she really was. And she didn't really get along with the cast as far as anything, where most of them were almost like family. She was the only one that was a strained part of the family, and just never really felt part of that, and wasn't sad at all when the show did not end up getting picked up, even though they all thought it would be.
Yeah, it was fun while it lasted, and of course, I really didn't get to know it until it was in syndication, probably the first or second time.
There's a good little YouTube. It was a Marianne's version of a kind of a behind the scenes of the show. It's on YouTube. You can catch it. I forget.
I'll probably check
that out.
I forget
what it's called.
That'd be fun.
But it very interesting. Gives some stories behind Mrs. Howell and how she never actually gave her age, and actually she was in her 60s to 70s when she was jumping around in the lagoon when they did the lagoon stuff and things like that. And she only ever did it because she never thought the pilot would ever be bought. And it was like a vacation because they shot the pilot in Hawaii. And she thought it was just like a vacation to Hawaii. It was Jim Backus. And the two that took it most seriously was Jim Backus and Alan Hale Jr. They both loved the idea, and Jim Backus just took it to heart. Said, "Man, you just take it for all you can get it." And he did put a lot into that, you know. And
you could tell. And it was fun seeing them on Family Feud. Maybe 15 years after the show ended, they were on Family Feud. I think against the Lost in Space family, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, except that. Jonathan Harris and Billy Mumy were not on there. And I guess Jonathan Harris called up Billy Mumy, said, "You're not going to be on that dreadful show, are you?" And Billy said, "No, I don't think so." I said, "Good for you. Neither am I."
Jeez. Somehow that doesn't surprise me. But it was fun seeing all those. And Guy Williams, probably shortly before he passed. He died rather young. And, of course, June Lockhart, she'll live forever.
Forever and ever.
It seemed.
It's
so much fun reminiscing on this show and getting new memories that preceded us with these old-time radio shows.
Yep. Well, sir, I think I'd like to tune in to see how our brother Gar is doing. I shall see you next Friday here on the radio as we Are you able to perform the weddings for next weekend? Are you?
Yes.
Did you get your certification yet? Okay, good.
Well,
good.
You know I was a wedding jock, so I should be able to.
There you go.
There you go.
Be prepared. Be prepared. You never know. All right, sir.
Exactly what are you proposing? Never mind.
I am proposing that you bring in the one and only Mr. James Durante, the hairy, the not quite so hairy James Durante.
Good night. It's time to say good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.
And now, until next time, till we meet again in the same place, I remain as always, obediently yours.